KZW, KZ4TMA.
KZ4TMA, W4DJW. Hey, Simon.
How you doing today?
Just finished cutting the grass and got stung by a hornet. So I've been doing better. How about you?
Just working out, so I'm feeling good, and I did not get stung. Sorry to hear that. You don't have any allergies, do you?
Well, I get stung very little. I did when I was a kid, but I never really know for sure. And this time, it didn't swell up, so I guess I'm okay. But they're not. They were the base of the big tree in the front yard, and they're history already.
You got me curious. Were any explosives involved?
Was what involved?
I said, were any explosives involved?
No, but explosive material. So first I got them. While I was cutting the grass, I just got the hose out and put one of those seven dust liquid things on there and sprayed the whole base of the tree, and just so I could finish cutting the grass. And I kind of kept them contained. And then once the grass cutting was finished, I went and got a can of ether. You know what ether is?
Interesting. You're talking to a guy with a physics background, so when I hear ether, I actually think of, like, you know, 18th century understanding of space and how light travels through space. So, no, I'm really curious.
No, it's not that kind of ether. This is starting fluid. It's ether. You put it in, they used to put it in little rubber balls and stuff like that. You chunk it down the carburetor and it would get an engine started that wouldn't start off gasoline. It's much more volatile than gasoline. So I got a couple of cans of ether, so I just went up there to the hole and went squirt, squirt. And then about four of them started buzzing around the tree, and as they would land in the hole, I'd just squirt them. And when ether touches, you know, ether or gasoline, anything petroleum in it touches a bee, their history, the instant it makes contact. So bees are dead with about three or four squirts of ether.
Sounds like that would have done the trick. We have carpenter bees in our backyard, and I spray them from time to time, but every now and then if I need a break from my office job, I'll just go out there with one of the kids' tennis rackets and see how many I can swat.
I don't know if you've heard of that, but they've got a rifle that's called Bug Assault, an assault on bugs. What it does is it shoots a bunch of salt pellets, not really pellets, but salt grain. You pour salt in the top of it, and you pump it, and you shoot carpenter's bees with it. It'll make a carpenter bee explode. Kind of like the tennis racket, except you're holding an assault rifle in your hand when you're doing it.
I've never heard of that, but I could easily see that selling pretty quickly on Amazon. So let me be right. I put salt in this thing. It's an air gun, and it projects small grains of salt fast enough to just tear through the body of a bumblebee or a carpenter bee, kind of like buckshot might tear through human skin at close range.
You got it. Look up Bug Assault. I bought one, so I get advertisements on it all the time. And it worked in the beginning. I haven't used it in a while. It's over in an airplane room up in the top of a cabinet, so I don't get it out. Instead, there was just too many of them. So I put these little white houses with a little clear plastic side on the side of it so that they have to go up into a hole on the side, and then the only light that's casting on inside is coming from that plastic container, so they fly out to it, and then they collect in that little clear plastic jar that's on the side of that little white house. And those things work like a charm. That gets rid of them pretty quick.
Something quite similar. I think maybe I just need to buy more than one for those type of house. But yeah, I like the Bug Assault. I can't count it as my workout the way I can if I use a tennis racket, but that still sounds pretty fun. I might have to look it up. Dave, I haven't worn out my welcome yet. I've got a technical question for you.
Okay, don't know how much I can answer. You with a physics degree, it's going to be hard to beat that physics degree.
It's not about theory, it's about practice. It's a practical thing. So some time ago, probably a couple weeks ago even, I heard you just doing a radio check. You were trying out a handheld, and I think you were making a dipole antenna for it, and just seeing how well it could reach, and you were comparing the SWR from, you know, the rubber duck antenna and the dipole. I was reading up recently, I'd like to make a little dipole for my handheld, and I had an idea on how to do it, and then I was eager to hear just what you were using for the one you made. So I'll just repeat, and if it's okay, I'll tell you what I was thinking, and then I'm really eager to hear what materials you were using for that dipole.
I was just using bare wire. and SMA connectors. SMA, you know, to get the coax up to the SMA to keep it shielded all the way till the one side of the dipole went down in one direction and the other side went up in the other direction. And I was just, you know, playing around with the length of it and cutting it and watching and tuning it and cutting it and tuning it and watching the SWR come down the curve. Not really the SWR at a single point, but watching the SWR as it goes, sweeps across the band and then making it shorter and shorter and seeing, okay, that curve moved down, but then it started going back up again before it got to the frequency I wanted. So now what have I got to do to make it keep coming down the band? And that's probably a telemarker, so I don't answer it. But does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. I mean, that's a very simple approach. You just got to estimate after to help and keep it shielded. You go up and down. And, yeah, I mean, if all you're using is, you know, the two conductors, the cokes, then, yeah, I get how you could just trim and tune and keep testing. So, but I guess I was, what I had in mind is I'd like to make something where, if I want to, I can remove my rubber duck and just quickly install what I would imagine is kind of like a handheld dipole. So I'm imagining something that I could still be holding the handheld with just one hand. And, but, you know, off to the side of that handheld, there would be some kind of a dipole antenna that's rigid enough that, I realize it would be a little clunky, but it's rigid enough that I could walk around with it and have better reception with a simple dipole antenna. So it sounds like what you're doing is you've got something that's really the set. But are you thinking of mounting those wires on some apparatus to make them rigid that you could use it with just one hand? You're just holding your handheld in one hand, and then that dipole is somehow attached to the handheld, so that, again, it's still just a one-hand operation.
So you're further along than I was. I wasn't worried about portability or, you know, how to mount it. I was just worried about finding the lengths of the wire appropriate for the position on the band that I wanted it to be tuned to. How you make that portable, that's a separate question. Are you familiar with a folded dipole? Are you familiar with what those look like?
I think so. Yeah, go on. I'm all ears.
So you probably want to Google folded dipole, and what you're probably going to run into is maybe a squalo or like a four-bay folded dipole. Four-bay folded dipole has four bays. They're different. They're like a meter apart or 2 meters apart. It's pretty tall, and there's like four of them. So the whole length of the whole thing is probably 8 to 10 meters tall. It's big, you know, like 30 feet. And a two-meter folded dipole is probably the best. I mean, it's better than a Yagi, right, for getting distance, for getting long distance, for, you know, it's not an omnidirection. Now, if you use four bays, you can put one bay pointing north and one bay pointing east and one bay pointing south and one bay pointing west, and you get omnidirection. But if you just got one bay, you got something like a squalo. And I think that's probably, are you familiar with what a squalo looks like? It's a like a square antenna.
For TMA for ID. Yeah, thank you. I've read about those just once. So between that one reading and your description, I think I've got the right picture for squalo.
Okay, so if you're looking at portability and increased performance, you're probably looking at something like a folded dipole or a squalo. But because there's only so much you're going to get out of a dipole, right? I mean, it's the standard by which all others are measured, and it is the root is the starting point. Everything else from there gets better. So if you want better and you don't want to carry a Yagi around in your hand, maybe a quarter wave folded dipole or a quarter wave squalo would be small enough to be portable, but significantly increase your distance, your performance, but in a direction. Are you looking for omnidirection increased performance?
But this is interesting, and it may be that just looking into these two options that you're reminding me of, that may be enough to just convince me to go with directional instead of omnidirection.
Yeah, because for omnidirection, if you want to increase performance, you're going to need size, right? And you're going to need size that's bigger than you're going to want to carry around portable.
That all makes sense. I'll tell you what, could I describe what I was envisioning, and then you could tell me maybe, first off, if it would even work, and second off, maybe give me a sense of, like, how much it would improve compared to just my little rubber ducky antenna.
I can try, but that's the reason I was experimenting, because I don't have a whole lot of experience in that area, and I was wanting to increase my experience. So I've done that exercise two or three times, and there's another guy that used to be in the club. His name was Matt. He changed his call, and I can't remember his new call. But he did the same thing, and just experiment with different two-meter antennas to try and improve performance. I can't tell you that I can tell you how to do it, because I haven't been able to, but I've experimented around and played with them enough to get kind of an idea of what to do, but I'm not sure on any of them that are better than something that you can buy that was modeled and is, you know, commercially available.
Okay, well, just for kicks, I'll just say this, and you can tell me if you think it's even worth playing around with, because this would be a very simple first step for me in trying to mess around with antennas. All right, so I've got my handheld and little rubber duck antenna, and then I know I can make a, what's it called, tiger tail or something tail, you know, that I let hang down, and that kind of acts like the other half of a dipole, but still, still just using a rubber duck. So then I just got to wondering, what if, again, this may sound silly, but just imagine it with me. I was imagining an SMA adapter, a 90-degree SMA adapter. So it comes out of the top of my handheld, turns 90 degrees off to the side, and then there's an SMA, you know, output right there. Then I was imagining a little T connector, right? So I plug my T connector into that 90-degree one. So now I've got SMA adapters that come straight up out of the handheld, turn 90 degrees, and then hit a T and point up and down. And then I would just stick two, I don't know, what are those called? Niaga? What's that Japanese name for it's kind of popular standard upgrade for your handheld or your Bofeng or something. I'd just stick one of those on the top and one of those on the bottom. But of course, we'd have a problem here where the one on the bottom, I would need to reverse, or inverse, I guess, the signal. I would need some kind of SMA adapter on that bottom that actually takes the signal from the inside conductor and moves it to the outside so that, again, you know, I'm getting my kind of positive and negative signals top and bottom correctly. So, again, there's my entirely rookie, silly first thought of how to make a dipole. 90-degree adapter to a T adapter, and on the bottom of that T adapter, I've got an SMA inverter of some kind that swaps the interior and exterior coax signals so that then the lower antenna would act like the bottom half of a dipole.
Yeah, you're thinking about it the right way. That's the same thing I was thinking. When you were talking about putting the T on there, first thing that came in my head was that center conductor is the center conductor that starts the T. That's the trunk of the tree, of the T. And then each limb on the T has the same center conductor, and you can't do that. You know, that center conductor has to go to the shield, right? It can't go to the radios. You can't have both of them go to the radio center conductor. Both of them can't carry the signal in. One of them has to be ground, and the other one has to be the signal wire. And then, you know, are you familiar with how an antenna conducts signals into the radio, how the electrons, so all the electrons start off on one end, and then they all go to the other end, and then all the electrons come back to another end, and they do that at whatever frequency your local oscillator is tuned to. Are you familiar with all that?
To the theory or like the physics of electron behavior in a dipole, yeah, I'm pretty confident I've got that down as far as how you actually generate that oscillating positive charge up top, negative charge down below, how that goes back and forth at the frequency that you're tuned to, and then how that actually generates the fluctuating electric and magnetic fields. Yeah, so I feel good about that.
Okay, so keep that in mind, and then you are responsible for building the path that lets the electrons go from one end to the other as the internal oscillator oscillates. If you keep that in mind, you'll be fine, right? If you put two center wires out there, you're not building a path for the negative side. You're just building a path for the positive side, and that's not going to do you any good.
Okay, so what do you think about that idea? I don't know what you'd call it, but I'm imagining an SMA connector that actually does invert those two paths So imagine, so you got my 90-degree adapter on top of the handheld, then it goes to the T, and the T has the top and the bottom. And imagine on the bottom, I attach another SMA adapter, and this one actually takes the center grounding signal, if you will, and moves it to the outside. Or sorry, the center main signal and moves it to the outside, the shield, that's usually the ground, and vice versa. So I don't know what the name of that would be. I guess you'd call it some kind of SMA inverter or something. But if that happened, then I do think that I'd have the right kind of path where the antenna that I screw onto that lower side, the electrons would be able to move in that right kind of way. Would you agree?
It sounds good. Yes, and it sounds like you're providing the path that's necessary to let the electrons flow in both directions. It sounds like that you're doing it for more than, you're doing it for like two cycles for every hertz. Because you're getting the counterpoise such that it has both the ground and a center wire. The center wire happens to be the ground, and the ground happens to be the center wire on the upper end. But I don't know how well that would work. You're providing a path for the electrons to exchange positions on both ends. So it would be interesting to see what that does. And the thing about SMA connectors, the manufacturers didn't get together when they created the standard for the SMA connectors. And some of them have a male connector that has a pin, and others have a male connector that doesn't have a pin. Some of them have the female connector that has the center pin, and some of them have the female connector that doesn't. If you get a male and a female, and neither has a center pin, you can screw those things together, and you'll beat your head against the wall and figure out why you're not getting any signal into that radio. Or if you get two of them that both have the pin, they won't go together, right? So you might be able to exploit that for your need. I don't know, but I know that exists, and I know when you buy SMA connectors, you got to pay attention to what side of it is and whether it has a center pin or not. And you can't put two of them that don't have center pins together, or you won't get anything.
Hey, May Friday. Yeah, I did come across that. So when I was Googling SMA inverter or something like that, that's actually what I found was, were these adapters were just clarifying how you've got these kind of both male and female versions of the male adapter, if you will. But yeah, exactly what you were just describing. Last question here. So when you mentioned that it seems like I'm almost making this path in a way that has two cycles per hertz or something like that, let me say why I don't think that's happening, but I can check my understanding against you. My understanding of these cheap kind of rubber ducky antennas, if I'm not mistaken, when I screw that onto my handheld, I believe that it's receiving the center signal from that center conductor. But I thought that these cheap rubber ducky antennas kind of ignored the outer ground shield conductor and just used the handheld itself as that counterpoise. That's why I was assuming that if I did this 90 degree to a T adapter and then rubber duck on top, rubber duck on bottom, I was under the impression that those two antennas on the top and bottom would only be receiving a signal from the center conductor, because I thought they ignored anything from the outer shield under the assumption that they're usually just going on a handheld, where the handheld itself kind of acts as the counterpoise. Is that not right? Do these simple SMA rubber duck antennas actually receive both the signals from both the center conductor and the outer shield?
W4DJW. It's kind of like the pie pan that you put your magnetic mobile antenna on to get a ground plane. You're screwing that antenna onto the metal that's on the handheld, and the handheld in most cases has a metal chassis, and that's what your signal's pushing off. That's the ground, right? You got to have something for the signal to push off of. There's got to be some counterpoise or a rod in the ground or a big cookie cutter sheet or something. So with the rubber duck on the handheld's mostly metal. It might be pop metal, but it's metal, and it's your ground plane, the handheld itself, the external part of it. And they make the metal part of the antenna screw onto that piece of metal that is grounded. That's all grounded. So, and I know it's not very good, and they know it's not very good, but you're only transmitting 5 watts, right? So if you do the voltage times the amperage to get the wattage, you can see that there's not very much current there at all.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Okay, I need to keep that in mind as I look into this. Well, listen, I really appreciate it. I'm sorry to jump off so quick. I'm here, and the party I'm meeting is staring at me through the window, so I need to jump off, and sorry to be quick about it. I'll keep looking at this, and if I make any progress, I'll be back in touch. But thanks very much. So W4DJW, KZ4TMA, I'll say 73 USMB, clear after your final.
All right, Simon, good discussion. I enjoyed it. That's refreshing. Fun to have to think about something like that in detail. But that's what I was doing that day that I was that I was working with somebody else on seeing whether or not that antenna was transmitting. That's a lot of fun. You can get involved in that. Anyway, have a good day. KZ4TMA, W4DJW, clear.
DJ Joga, DJW, KA3JCA.
KCA, W4DJW, I went down to get coffee. Can you hear me on the handheld?
Yeah, I can. Hey, just a real quick comment. The other guy was talking about, I guess, Nagoya antennas, but the name of that company that makes the Nagoya antennas is called Ruex Industrial, R-E-U-E-X, and they might have the schematic or the work plan of how the antenna is made.
Yeah, I might go look that up. I've compared that antenna to some others that I have, and that one doesn't work quite as good as the others. Its SWR is way off compared to my other ones. So I don't know that I really want to use that one for a model. Could be I got a dud, but that one didn't work very good for me.
I use the Nagoya for my DMR handhelds, and I actually, that versus what come with the radio, I'm happier with the Nagoya 771. It's the 15-inch antenna dual band.
I'm mixing them up. Looking, I don't have my glasses down here. I'm trying to look on my handheld to see. One of them was really good, and the other ones are really bad. I'll have to look when I get back upstairs, but I'm downstairs right now getting a coffee. I'll look and give you a shout when I get back upstairs.
KA3JCA.
W4DJW.
KA3JCA, W4DJW. You still there?
Sam, KA3JCA.
So you're right. The Nagoya is the good one. It's the NA771. Is that the one you were talking about?
That's what I have. It was actually funny because here at the house, when I put my Anytone 878 on and screwed to the antenna, I could barely get anything reception at all. And then I put on the 771, and boy, it just, I can get two NOAA weather stations with no problems whatsoever. And at least I can kind of hear the repeater, but other than that, I can't get into it from my house. So I have an outside antenna.
Well, I had a junk drawer that had like a half a dozen to a dozen different antennas. This one's called a 771. But it doesn't have the Nagoya name on it. So I think that's an aftermarket. And it was none of these, even the factory ones that come on the Kenwood TH7D, they weren't anywhere close. They've got an MFJ1717S, nowhere close to any standing wave of any respectability. I got a Nagoya. Okay, that's a 328, but that's for 220 megahertz, not 70 centimeters or 2 meters. And then I got the standard one. That's four of them that I tried that day, and none of them were any good except for the Nagoya that's on there right now, the 771, and that one was good. So there, that just lets you know there's a whole lot more bad rubber ducks out there than there are good ones.
I agree with that. So there's another, if he doesn't have it, ARRL has a good antenna book. I have one somewhere out in the garage on a bookshelf somewhere. I got to find it. But I tell you what, when I used to dabble with antennas 20, 25 years ago, I tell you what, it was like a lifesaver. I used to build a lot of HF antennas and VHFs, and I used to use, as a matter of fact, I think I was making a disc cone before they ever came out with a disc cone.
Yeah, I have several of those really big books. I picked up at Hamfest, the older ones that you could get for much less than having to buy a brand new one. I did buy a couple of brand new ones, but I found out, you know, the old ones, the material that's in the older ones, that material still is valid material, right? It's not invalidated by the new ones that came out. So I just started buying, scarfing up the old ones that I could find when I could at the Hamfest. And that's a lot of intelligence you're getting at a very low price.
It's like cars nowadays. I grew up where you could go out and you could take a car and you can put a timing light on it and do all your own tune-ups and testing and everything. Now everything's electronic, and you just have to change modules or whatever. So, yeah, the old stuff is nice. I mean, I liked it when you could buy a radio and you could buy a schematic, the owner's manual and the service manual for the radio at the same time.
Those were the good old days. But I wouldn't want to go back to them, but they were good. I can't tell you how many hours I sat on the inside fender of my 1959 Chevrolet pickup truck, rebuilding the six-cylinder engine or putting a new carburetor on it or fixing the starter or the solenoid or whatever it might be, even driving it to a junkyard and dropping the transmission out of it and putting a used transmission in it and driving away with the new transmission in it from the junkyard. Yeah, those were the good old days, but I wouldn't want to go back to them. The reason they were good, you could do that, is because you had to do those things. With the equipment that you get today, you shouldn't have to be doing that anymore.
I know what you mean. So, well, I just was laying here and I heard the conversation. I didn't want to jump in here because I knew the guy could go there. But, God, it's been a while since I've talked antennas, and it just started me thinking again. I'm thinking, yeah, I like the guy's idea.
You know, that's like forever. I think most ham operators, right, most ham radio operators probably think about that. That's something that's going on in the back of their mind all the time. It just comes to the surface every now and then.
Tell you what, I wish I had the capabilities. I'd build myself like a 24 by 24 shop out back and make it my ham shack. I had a friend up in Delaware that had like part of his garage. He actually built like a 12 or 14 by 20 room on the side of his garage or whatever, and in it he put like three workstations for radios and towers, and he put in a set of bunk beds and a refrigerator and a small little stove top, and then he would actually run emergency power out in the garage and run it all from his house, and it was totally isolated from the power grid.
Yeah, it is nice to have a shop like that. I used to have the whole basement of the house was my shop. It was the same size as the house, and it was a decent-sized house. So it was a really nice shop. Now I've got two rooms in the upstairs, a bonus room and one of the bedrooms. And one of them's an office, and one of them is an airplane building room. And that's nowhere near the space I used to have, so it does hurt to have to downsize.
Sounds like another expensive hobby. Yeah, I'm into ham radio. I'm into photography. I have a pilot's license myself, but it's for bigger planes, not like the ones you guys are flying. My daughter heard you guys talking. I guess it's been a couple weeks now, but you guys going out to the place to fly some planes, and she asked, she says, Dad, can we go out there and watch them? And I told her, let me find out when they're doing it again, and I'll see. We'll just ride out there and watch.
You ought to do that. You really ought to. We invite anybody that wants to come out there and watch. And some people even get involved in it. It is contagious. Well, you can get bit by the bug, by the flying bug. It bit me when I was 6 years old and it never let go.
When I was younger, my dad and I used to build them. And we used to use the balsa wood and build the thing. And then we'd stretch that... not polyurethane, it was like the plastic type fabric over it, and use a heat gun to melt it, to shrink it, and so forth like that. But that was, again, that was probably 35, 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's monocoat. They've got different kinds of coats now. They got ultra coats and super coat, and I think you can still get monocoat. But before that was silk span. That's what I started off with, silk span and dope. And you had to open the room window in your room or you'd get high. So you have to sand it and get all the little notches out of it. And then you put the silk span on and you you paint it on with dope, and then you stretch it out, and you let it dry, and then you sand off the edges of the silk span, and then you dope the edges down, and then you mist it with some water, and it shrink and get really, really tight, and you do that 3 or 4 times, and then you put a coat of dope on it, and all that was always clear, and then you put paint on top of that, and it made a really slick finish, like a new car finish, but there's a whole lot more work than just stretching some monocoat across there and touching it with iron to hold it down.
Those were the days. Those were the days. So, all righty. Well, I'll let you go here. I got to get something to drink myself here, and I think my wife's going to go out here and try to cut the grass. So I want to at least make sure she does it safely, so... W4DJW KA3JCA.
All right, well, good talking to you. Enjoyed it. Reminiscing of the good old days, but I wouldn't want to go back to them. KA3JCA, W4DJW, clear.